You're listening to Valley Edition. Back in the late 1990s, California voters passed Proposition 227, which imposed strict restrictions on bilingual education in California's public school classrooms. Supporters of the effort said English immersion was the best way for English learners to succeed and assimilate into society. Critics said by teaching core subjects only in English, non-English speakers were at a disadvantage in the classroom. That debate has simmered for 16 years, but now it's back in the news. A new bill by Senator Ricardo Lara would put a repeal of Prop 227 restrictions before voters in November of 2016. Lara says California of today is different from California of the late 1990s and that districts and parents should have more say over what types of dual language programs schools offer. That bill, SB 1174, was recently approved by the Senate Education Committee with support not only from Democrats, but also from Republican Senate Minority Leader Bob Huff. So is California really ready to change course on bilingual education? We'll hear from opponents of the Lara bill in a moment. But first, we're joined by Professor Patricia Gondara. She is a professor of education at UCLA and the co-director of the Civil Rights Project. Professor Gondara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me to join you.
The issue of bilingual education in California has been one that is not without controversy going back decades. The current legislation that is in Sacramento, what would it change from where we're at right now in Sacramento and our schools?
Well, the legislation is still being developed, so I don't think we can say specifically how this will operate. But the idea is to return choice to parents and allow parents in California, without having to go through a cumbersome and oftentimes not even successful waiver process, to be able to enroll their children in a dual language or bilingual program.
What is that process like right now?
Well, right now, the default program in California is an English immersion, a structured English immersion program. And that can mean many things, but that's what it's titled. And right now, fewer than 5% of kids actually even have access to anything like a bilingual instruction. So overwhelmingly, children in California are in these English immersion programs. In order to be in a program that is not English immersion, parents can seek a waiver, and they have to go to the school, and they have to fill out forms, and then these have to be weighed by the principal and then the district, and they have to decide whether they have enough parents who want this program. And so it can be lengthy, cumbersome, and not very friendly, really, particularly to parents who aren't really savvy about how the schools operate.
Many supporters of bilingual education cite new research that suggests that bilingual instruction in public schools actually is a direct benefit or has a net benefit versus English-only immersion instruction. Can you tell me more about what your research and your analysis of that research shows us?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm delighted for the opportunity to do this because too often policies get made without paying any attention to what the research says. And even at the time that Proposition 227 passed in 1998 in California, which resulted in this virtual ban on bilingual instruction, folks simply were not paying attention to what research told us. But since that time, there has been a new generation of research that just simply affirms and extends some of the things that we already knew. And that includes recent studies that have looked at the couple of the very largest school districts, including LAUSD in California, and tracking children from kindergarten into high school to see how these children fare who have been in a consistent bilingual instruction versus those that have been in an English immersion instruction. And basically, the findings from this work, and a lot of this has been done recently under the supervision of Sean Reardon at Stanford University, findings are totally consistent that children who have been continuously in the bilingual programs are outperforming the children who have been in English immersion programs When we look at English language acquisition scores, when we look at English proficiency, and even the likelihood of being reclassified as English proficient. So on all of these important measures, the children who have been, who've had the opportunity to be in dual language or bilingual programs are doing very well. Now, that's just looking at test scores. There are many other benefits to a bilingual education, which we have known about for some time, and these include psychological benefits. It includes things even to the extent that these children who are being educated bilingually have statistically fewer behavior problems in school. They have more advanced cognitive development. There are such a host of things, and we're about to publish a book in a couple months that looks at the economic benefits. And we're finding that those young people entering the labor market are going, who are bilingual or multilingual, are going to have significant advantages in the labor market.
Going back to 1998, when Prop 227 was passed by California voters, what sort of data do we have about how education performance changed during that time? And has bilingual instruction, the thought behind it, the concepts behind it, has it also developed and changed in that time? Things in 1998 were quite different. Just look at the internet back then compared to today.
Yeah, I think that the supporters of English-only instruction like to point out that during this period in which we have had this virtual ban on bilingual instruction, English learners' scores have gone up, and they attribute that to English-only instruction. The fact of the matter is that everybody's scores went up, and the gaps did not close. So a lot of things were happening. We had class size reduction. We had at that time we were in a period that was not so underfunded as came to be later on, and a number of additional programs were added to the schools, and it showed some impact. So all kids got a little bit better, but I think that the important message is that the gap didn't close. So with more attention, with more funding, with a somewhat smaller class size, with some targeted programs, English learners improved, but they didn't improve enough to close the gaps, and that's really an important message.
Our guest today on Valley Edition has been Patricia Gandara. She is the professor of education at UCLA and the co-director of the Civil Rights Project. Professor Gandara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And joining us now with another perspective on this issue is Cliff Colwell. He is a physician and a member of the board of the group Pro English, which opposes the Laura bill. Mr. Colwell, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Looking back to 1998 and the years that have gone by since then, how would you characterize California's experiment in rolling back bilingual education in the schools?
Well, I think it's an excellent question, and what it really looks at is what happened between the early 70s when it was mandated for bilingual education. By 1998, that social experiment, at least based on the data that was available, was not successful. And consequently, the vote in that referendum, 227, was over 60% were in favor of dropping that in favor of a immersion program. That's now called a structured English immersion program. But all of the data that's been published since then, there are lots of research projects going on, but all the published data would suggest that immersion has been a much more effective tool than bilingual education, and the cost of course, is immensely different. This actually cost billions of dollars between the 70s and 1998. As you're also aware, this happened quickly again in Arizona by 2000 with over 64% of the people voting for a change, and then again in Massachusetts in 2004 with over 68%. So it's been an opportunity to study this subject at great depth.
Yes, certainly. And speaking of studies, one of the ones that was mentioned by Patricia Gandara in our last segment from Professor Reardon in Stanford gives both sides a little bit of ammunition. He found in this recent study published in 2014 that in elementary school, Latino students enrolled in dual language programs were reclassified as English proficient at a slower overall rate, but then in high school, they were at a faster overall rate, so gaining there. So there's a lot of research and different things that we could look at. But turning to the Lara bill, Senator Lara talks about how California is now a different state, how having these multilingual skills is much more important for success. Do you believe that makes it more important to look at the way the state does bilingual instruction now? Do you believe that's a sound argument?
Well, I think you always should continue to look at situations because it's a moving playing field. I agree with that. But they don't discuss at all the issue of which languages. If you look at the civil rights issues here, we now have 327 languages in this country. And by civil rights, if you're going to teach in a second language, you're going to have to do that in each language. When you consider attempting to get teachers who are qualified in all these languages to teach at all schools, and that's not even considering the cost of such a program. So people focus on bilingual with just the Spanish, but you can't just do that. There's no way in the world that you can deprive anybody else then. If you're going to produce it for Spanish, you're going to have to produce it for all these 327 languages. We have to do that in medicine now. You may be aware of that in the Clinton administration, a presidential order was that we had to provide language translation in medicine if you received either Medi-Cal or Medicare funding in all languages. Now, that is possible to do. It's very expensive, but it's possible. But to teach all the children in the school systems that, I just can't imagine the cost of that.
What about the issue of local control? Some people have said, why not leave it up to individual school districts? Different districts in different parts of the state may have different views on it. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that's already available, and I think it's a great access route if both the parents and the teachers at a specific school system decide they want to teach in a separate language, whichever one that is. They can do that right now. I agree with that totally. At a local level, you should be able to decide this. The question is, should you do either state funding? And the federal government bowed out of this completely in 2002 at the time of the No Child Left Behind Act. The federal government said, we just can't see that we're going to fund it. If the state wants to fund it, that's fine. But we're out of the funding issue for this.
Again, we've been talking with Cliff Colwell. He is a physician and a member of the board of the group Pro English, looking at bilingual education programs in California. And those test scores, do you feel that those rise in test scores are directly attributed to English immersion programs over the past years?
I believe that's the case. I believe that everything that's been published since 1998, I'm not talking about studies that are in process, but anything that's been published would favor immersion program.
All right. Again, Dr. Colwell, thank you so much for joining us. He's from the group Pro English, which opposes the Lara bill. We'll see if that winds up before California voters in November 2016, still some time away. But Dr. Colwell, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.